Welcome to River Life Podcasts. We're a church family embracing the Father's presence, releasing empowered people to declare and demonstrate Christ's kingdom. We trust that God would use what you hear today to bless and grow you so that you would be a blessing to those around you. For more information about River Life Baptist Church, go to riverlifechurch.org.au or find us on social media.
Well, welcome back to another episode of River Life's Going Deeper podcast. This is a continuing conversation about the deeper things of God. What a great tagline.
Oh, wow. So good.
So cool. Hey, my name is Scott McKinnon, and I'm joined by my co-host, Joe Litton. How you going?
I'm very well.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. What's happening today, Joe? Well, what have we got?
We are actually, as we record this, we are right at the start of our Live to Love conference.
That's right.
And we have the absolute pleasure of having our guest from the conference come into the podcast. And and foremost, because he is by far our favorite, I won't let the others know that when
they come in. Don't tell them that.
Paul Martini is back in the hot seat.
Welcome.
Hey. So good to have you.
Good to be here.
Welcome back to Brisbane in our beautiful winter climate here.
Yeah. It's a bit cold, isn't it?
I mean, man, it made it below 20 degrees today.
It is perfect. When you come from Pennsylvania, man, this weather is amazing.
So is this like summer? Oh, not quite.
No, summer's hotter than this, okay. But it's like a nice fall or early spring day for us.
But it's is it dry in Pennsylvania? Like dry heat?
Or
is
it's humid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh. There you go.
So your Brisbane summer's really equivalent to ours.
Ooh, that's rough.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. We'll get up to the high 30s, 40s. Ooh.
Yeah, no, that's no good.
So a little bit of a backstory. If you haven't already listened to another episode, we had Paul Martini in, it would have been a couple months ago.
February.
Maybe a year ago. February this year.
Yeah.
Holy dooly, that's gone quick.
Yep.
So you're currently now on pastoral team at Life Center Ministries International.
Yes.
And so that's in Pennsylvania. That's mm-hmm. in Harrisburg.
Yeah, Harrisburg.
If you have been listening to this podcast, you might have remembered Dylan Krauss. That's actually his home church. Mm-hmm. How'd you end up there? Because you were previously an itinerant minister, I guess.
Yeah, so...
What's the story there?
Well, Global Awakening, I've been with them since 2009.
And it's Randy Clark's organization.
Yep, sorry. Yep, Dr. Randy Clark. And so I'm still working for them. And yeah, don't forget the doctor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Come on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know.
I appreciate how hard that is.
Sorry, I'm used to saying it that way. He had this... heart to come out to Harrisburg and that area. And so I live there. That's where my wife lives. And so Life Center is actually the best. We have wonderful churches there, but Life Center was the best fit for me and Ruth. And so we've been attending there when I could, traveling. Mm. And then, just found like a perfect fit.
So cool.
And looking to transition, if it all goes well, to full time there eventually.
Wow.
But if that's what the Lord wants, cool. But we're kind of just waiting and seeing.
That's a pretty big change from itinerant ministry to local church pastoral ministry. How are you finding the rapid gear change?
Yeah, it's totally, there's some really good positive things that are about it, because you can really get to connect on a more intimate level with the local people and build relationships and connections, and that really lacks as you itinerate. You know, that's a different calling that you have, and I believe God's blessed that, but it definitely can really be a challenge relationally with people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but now that you're have more of a home church and you're there locally, you get to build that foundation with people. So I'm really enjoying that part. So still looking and working on boundaries, you know, because I'm figuring that out, that people, if you don't give people boundaries, they will...
They'll set their own.
They'll set their own. Yeah,
so very, very close.
Totally envelop you.
Yes. So learning how to manage that. But yeah, it's been amazing, really amazing. Charles and Ann Stock, who are here as well. I'm sure you guys will meet them. Are just phenomenal leaders and loving people. So
that's so good. You've been when you were here last time, you were talking about a book you were just finishing writing. That's actually coming out. At recording is out now.
Yeah.
Just been released, fresh.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll have some copies in Australia soon. We'll put it on in the show notes where you can find a copy. But tell us just a little bit about that. Remind us what the book was about and kind of what God's been speaking to you and doing through that space.
Yeah. I actually been doing a lot of interviews for the book too, which is really fun. It's a book based on the power of peace, which is a message that I carried. Mm-hmm. It's a great honor to release this book. It's called Access and Release God's Peace, From Chaos and Confusion to Freedom and Power.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Sweet.
And God's been just, yeah, doing amazing things through that message, a lot of people getting touched. And so it's just an honor to release
such
a book.
That's so good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think,
it's a great message.
Yeah, I was saying it before, but I think that's like a powerful word for our generation, like mm-hmm. right now. Like the people that we are interacting with, no doubt in the States as well. Yeah, it's just like a lot of anxieties about mm-hmm. life, mm-hmm. Let alone anxiety, you know, clinically. And so, yeah, that's awesome that peace would be so powerful in that space. Yeah, did that come from a personal testimony?
Yeah, it came from my personal journey when I was going through a really hard time in my life and going through a divorce and dealing with that with children and just really lost and really experiencing God's peace and learning about God's peace and how to navigate that. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions about peace is that it's a place of quiet and a place of calm. And not that you can't have calm and peace, but it's peace is not inferior to power or confusion or I think in the world's context, you know, to have peace, there needs to be an emptying of yourself. Yes, there needs to be a
it's
place
like Eastern
of quiet
kind of meditation.
Exactly. And right. And honestly, that's not very powerful because any influx or obstacle or confrontation will rob you of peace.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Because you're trying to empty yourself. And so when your mind's empty, then something comes in and fills that almost like.
Right. Well, and it kind of almost highlights that difference between a peacekeeper and a peacemaker.
Absolutely. And I talk about that in my book, you know, is that, you know, peacekeepers actually are not at peace, you know, because they're actually trying to satisfy everyone else's needs.
Yeah. Right.
So they walk on eggshells trying to keep everyone at peace and at bay. Uh-huh. And oftentimes it really doesn't accomplish much.
Yep.
But God's peace is actually a infilling and a overcoming with his kingdom.
Yeah, it's not passive, is it?
No, it's very aggressive. And actually the original meaning, I don't know if I talked about this last time, but the original meaning of peace in the ancient Hebrew, just like in our day, words evolve and develop and they mean different things centuries later. And the word shalom has been very full, and it means total completeness inside out. It's such a full word, and people who've studied it understand that. But at its basic concept in ancient Hebrew, it was very simplistic, and it goes off of the actual letters that they used to develop the word, because the Hebrew was more of like a pictorial thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys want me to explain this or not.
Yeah, please. No, please.
But yeah, in the Hebrew, the first picture, the first letter is a picture, and it looks like teeth, like a really jagged W, and that means destroy. The second letter is like a shepherd's hook, and in its simplest form, it means authority. And the third letter is a nail. It's actually an attaching letter. It looks just like a nail, and that means to attach. And then the fourth and final letter is actually it looks like a bunch of waves, and it actually means chaos. And so when you literally said peace,
destroy.
Yeah, it's to destroy the authority attached to chaos.
Mm. Wow.
So when you're praying peace over someone, you really don't want to pray like, you're not praying like, God, I pray that they're calm. I pray they accept the situation they're in. I pray. It's actually, God, it's I'm like praying that you would destroy the chaos attached to their life.
Wow.
The authority that's attached to the chaos in their life. Yeah. So,
that's awesome. Because peace breaking in then is like a pretty momentous act.
Yeah.
Like it's an experience. It's not a passive sitting there and waiting for the water to come so I can just sit here and float. You know, it's actually, boom, it's breaking into that space.
Totally. I mean, when Christ actually talks about peace in context to, you know, like the Romans, there was the Pax Romana for years. It was like this amazing time of peace where Rome created in the known world. But really, had they attained that peace?
Violence. Yeah.
Right. They conquered and destroyed and created this presence. And so when we take that into God's peace coming in. What we're really saying is God conquer us and have full authority.
So that's great.
And chaos have authority in my life.
That's so cool.
Actually, your peace will. And so when you come in conflict with obstacles and confrontation, you have options.
That's so cool.
And those such options a timely are powerful word. Peace. Yeah.
It's so timely.
Man.
Like, you just look at, you know, where, particularly in the church, just with the outside forces and people's lack of depth of intimacy, like you can just see, and that's where we get unstuck, is that where we don't have those roots that have grown down deep into the soil of who God is. Like that experience of peace isn't just smoothing the soil at the surface, it's actually digging deep and getting rid of the bad roots.
Yeah, exactly.
The, you know, the things that aren't holding us tight to God. That's so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Shalom reminds me of the Garden of Eden. I feel like that. I don't know. I always think of that's the perfect picture of peace. It's like intimacy with the Lord. No shame, no baggage. But
things to do.
Still work to do. Yeah, totally.
Like not just sitting there.
No, it's not like, exactly right. It's not crossing your legs.
But I would submit to you that the Garden of Eden is a perfect picture of peace that's without sin.
Yeah.
Jesus is a perfect picture of peace in a world of sin. So when you look at his responses and how he handled and responded to conflict and responded to, that's actually a better picture of what peace looks like in a place of chaos.
Yeah, awesome.
So, you know, and so
that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So and this is real life, right? Yeah. So to give people a message that only tickles their ears but doesn't give them tools to actually transform and do something is not good. So I think this message of peace, you could read it, study it, consume it, and actually live it out, and it'll change your life. So
cool.
That's why I think I wasn't even gonna put it out as a book, but a publishing company was begging me to, so we just did it. So
cool. Well, don't tell us the tools. You're gonna have to read the book to understand how you're gonna change your life and how you're gonna bring the authority of chaos into peace, like, and to break that and to destroy that chaos in your life. So we'll put a link in the show notes and you can go check it out. Is it on Book Depository?
It's on amazon.com.
so good. Amazon.com.
You can get it probably at your major bookstores.
So cool.
So it's through Chosen Publishers, so you can just
wherever
they're at, you know, you can get it.
All right, so as part of our podcast this year, with every guest that is in our studio, we are asking 5 different questions. Okay. So imagine you're down by the lake and you're picking up some stones and you're having a laugh and you're chucking out these stones, skipping stones. There are 5 questions we're going to ask you. The first question is this, which I think we've already spoiled because in our pre-recording chats, we definitely went there. Anyway, if I was to Google you, what would I find?
If you were to Google me...
Paul Martini.
Well, I knew this from being a young boy, but if you were to Google me, you would find a professional ice skater.
Ooh. Wow.
Who ice skated in the Olympics, in the Winter Olympics of, I forget what year, but I remember I was a young boy, and someone told me that...
Was he American?
I think he was American, but you know, obviously he was Italian, but Italian-American.
Yeah, Italian-American.
You know? But you get that. I think I'm the top hit, or at least I was for a while. And then.
You know, your phone serves you what you need to see.
Does it? Dang it.
It's all rigged.
Dang it.
No, it was on mine too, but it's probably because I've been Googling you.
Oh, right, yeah. So we'll see. And then I think you find I don't know what else, but I know that the ice skater is a big one. He's famous.
There you go. That's pretty cool. So that's pretty cool.
Excellent. Okay, second question, a little bit different. How would you describe the color yellow to a blind person?
Wow. That is the oddest question I've ever heard in my life.
There's a better one coming.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I would say that it's...
Yellow. Like, what is yellow?
Yellow is something that's bright. So I would reference it to the sun and the warmth of the sun on our skin.
Good. Yeah.
And I would say that, so I would say yellow is warm and bright and loud. And so it's like a strong sun on your skin.
Nice. I like that. Well done.
I like, you know, using another sense to help describe.
And
you
loud. You're the first person to say loud.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But that's true. I like that.
Some people said pineapple.
The taste of pineapple.
Tastes like pineapple. That's a yellow for them. Anyway, moving on. Which person besides Jesus in the Bible is your hero? Anyone.
My wife.
Ruth. Cheeky.
Well, she's just so, she's amazing. I can't imagine how she does what she does. And so she, every day I see her, it blows my mind that she even chose someone like me and that she chose to raise our family. Cool. So she's our hero.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Question four. A penguin walks through the door into our studio right here wearing a sombrero. What does he say and why is he here?
What? A penguin walks in the door.
Wearing a sombrero.
And now I'm skipping rocks while I'm pondering this. What does he say?
Why is he here?
I would think he... I have no idea. I don't even know how to answer this question. This is the last question. Oh, gosh, there's one more. I would say he is he's here to party. Yep. I mean, there's no other reason. No one wears a sombrero unless they're going to party, right? True. So that's thinking he's here to party.
Yep.
And he got out of the aquarium or something is wrong. I don't know.
Something's wrong.
I don't know. He needs deliverance.
he's
say?
A talking penguin, so yeah.
Oh, he
does
talks.
Well, what does he say?
True. I guess. Oh, he could say something in penguin. Yeah. We didn't.
Right. You didn't quite. What's he? He's like automatic English. Yeah. So he would say, I don't know what penguins sound like.
I was hoping you'd try.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so close for a second then.
I guess he would squawk. Do they squawk?
It's a bird, right?
Yeah, I would think.
You tell us.
I think he would say, "Feed me."
Feed me. Feed me.
Last question. Go, Scott.
All right, final question. What was the last book that you finished? Or you were close to finishing?
Yeah. Oh, man. This is... I was doing a study on demonology.
So the possessed penguin was timely.
Yeah. So I read like 4 or 5 books, and I think the last one was by Francis McNutt.
Oh, yes.
Casting Out Evil Spirits. I think it's called Casting Out Evil Spirits. But that, I mean...
Was that just for fun? Just get a little bit of light reading on your Saturday afternoon?
Well, yeah, bored on a weekend. Because you have like 5 children.
When you have this many children, you need to know how to cast out demons.
That's true.
I mean, it's just kind of...
From yourself,
just
probably.
Just out of desperation.
Definitely need it in your arsenal of things to do with parenting.
It's so funny. I think that was the last Deliverance from Evil Spirits. Yeah, that's what it was called. But I will say that one of the best books I read recently isn't a Christian book per se, but it's called In Sheep's Clothing.
Okay. Cool.
And it's called it's about understanding and dealing with covert aggression.
Cool.
Ooh.
And which is different from passive aggressive and is different from narcissistic personalities. Actually, covert aggression is more prominent and
more than passive.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah. And actually, passive aggressive is often mislabeled. It's really covert aggression. And I was like, wow, this is such an amazing tool.
Wow.
You really are getting ready for pastoral ministry.
I am. I am totally. but it's it's just even interesting how to deal with them, how to talk to them, and you know, and so how
cool.
And how to cast them out.
Nice.
Yeah, it works together. Nice.
Yeah, there so you cool. go for sure.
Well, there you go. That's you did pretty well.
I will say, like, this book, Covert in Sheep's Clothing, is a really good read, especially for leaders, but definitely even people who are in church leadership. I mean, it's not a book that is. It's written by a PhD. And it is an easier read, and you can get it on Kindle or audiobook too. So that's
awesome.
Good.
Very cool.
It's a good book.
Great. Well, as part of just having guests in the studio, especially international guests, we love to ask them a question about what they really feel like God's doing around the world. What are you feeling? What are you picking up that God's doing? And if there's any encouragement for the listeners, as we kind of finish off this episode,
I think what God's put on my heart for. Even at least with the season that I'm in, I think we just need to, as believers, know how to handle and be honest with ourselves where we're at with God. Honesty, in my opinion, is the doorway for encounter. And if you can't be honest with yourself in front of God, like just say, God, this is actually where I'm at. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. And this is like, even if it's not like a And oftentimes when we approach God, we feel like we have to have a certain mindset or a certain attitude, you know.
Or persona, like, I've got to be all together, you know. Like, I'm not allowed to approach God's throne unless this stacks up.
Yeah. And so, but the reality is that we're all in different places at different times, and there's a fluidity to to our understanding and beliefs. And so I've just been dealing with and talking about more recently how to deal with belief in the middle of unbelief, how to deal with unbelief in the middle of belief. And sometimes Christians, they're so scared to say that they don't believe, when the reality is that we understand that you do believe. We understand you've accepted Christ, you've entered into faith, you have faith, but you don't, but you still struggle in areas of unbelief. And oftentimes these areas are our obstacles. And so I asked God, like, give me a picture, because I've been sharing about this and trying to have words to communicate it. And he basically gave me this picture. He said, Paul, it's like you bought a field of faith. You know, like you've entered into Christianity. You've, you believe in Jesus Christ, but there's still stumps of doubt that I trip over, or that others trip over. And when we enter into believing, it's kind of like he rips out those unbelief stumps of doubt. And so I did just studied, and I was talking about it. And actually, one of the most honest people in the Bible is in Mark 9, where the father of a demonized boy brings his son to Jesus, to his disciples. Disciples couldn't cast it out. Jesus cast the demon out. But Jesus says, all things are possible to those who believe. And the man says, I do believe, help my unbelief.
Yeah.
And that's so, and he actually, it says in my version, with tears.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, Jesus, with tears.
Wow. Help my unbelief.
Help my unbelief. Wow. So obviously he believes, he brought his child there.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's this fluidity in our own lives between belief and unbelief. And most of us think that we need to come to Jesus full of belief for him to move, but actually that's not how he that's answers
true.
Unbelief.
That's true.
Some theologians will say that unbelief, if you die in unbelief, it's the unpardonable, unforgivable sin. Because how could God forgive something that you don't even believe in? That's what some theologians would say. And so technically what you could say is that unbelief, if you died in it, is unforgivable. But in our current life, I say this, that unbelief, even though it might be unforgivable or unpardonable, it is overcomable. And Jesus, how he answers your unbelief is he overcomes it through encounter. Yeah. And so what does he do? He doesn't tell the man, come back when you have more faith. Come back when you fully believe. What does he do? He casts the demon out of the boy. What do you think happened to that father's belief once his
straight away
son was, his unbelief probably entered into more belief. So as you go through this,
but then even then there still would be questions for him in his mind. Like, wait, what, where did it come from? Where did that demon enter in? Like, what do I do now? So I don't think it would be like 100%. I don't know, maybe it was, but I feel like it wouldn't be 100%.
We don't know that part of the story. We know our story, and we know that we struggle in areas of unbelief that get taken out. We still have other areas that God continually overcomes for, whether it's in finance, relationship, or whatever. So so that God's been really dealing with that. And
but that's the faith gap, too, is that we're not going to get all the answers, no matter what. Like, I mean, even Jesus didn't have all the answers. Like, so there's things that I don't know that only the Father knows now.
Yeah.
And so there's that faith gap is where the unbelief sits. And so it's that, you know, it's the invitation to be authentic in that, because it's only when we recognize that this is where my faith extends to, this is where it stops and I can't believe for that. That's the gap that then God can speak into.
Yeah.
Because like if Paul says, the Bible, Paul, not you, he wants to do more than we can ask or imagine. There's a gap between what he can do and what we can even think up, let alone believe for.
Yeah,
and so, like, he's got a space there that's where he gets to sit. That's where he gets to do his best, which actually draws us into him.
Yeah.
And I think if we fool ourselves to think that we have a full understanding of everything, I have no unbelief in my life, then I don't think that's possible.
You can't work with that. It's like when people say, God told me. Yeah. And it's like, well, you shut down every avenue of like bringing it to your pastors and walking it out and all that stuff, where, you know, you should be more open to saying, hey, God, you know,
I feel like,
I feel like, you know, hey, can I get some help me with this process kind of thing. So,
so I mean, a humility and a maturity to be able to go, this is where I get unstuck. This is where I have question marks. This is the gray of my life.
Yeah.
Cause otherwise it's Well, then you're ready to go to glory because you got it all sorted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And honestly, God, and the way Jesus overcame unbelief was through encounter or that's doing so a sign or a wonder.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's how he did it. I've watched many debates on YouTube about between Christians and atheists.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll interview the attendees afterwards. And you know what? The ones who are atheists go, man, I think the atheist did the best.
Yep.
And the ones who are Christian go, man, the Christian did the best to explain the gospel and all. And no one goes away going, you know what, I think I'm an atheist. Oh, I think I'm a Christian. It's like you really don't hear that.
Yeah.
What it's usually that people have an encounter that brings them into belief. I mean, they might have thought it through and discovered the gospel in an intellectual way. But in the end, encounter has to happen. And I think that's really
so
key.
Good.
Jesus, you know, oftentimes when we read, I don't have the address for it right now, but, you know, when Jesus says, unless you, it's the Gideon man comes to him about his servant boy, and he says, Jesus says, unless you people see signs and wonders, you'll never believe.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and I've always read that verse in that negative
context. Like, oh, man, they've got no faith. Like,
right. But the reality
the flip
is,
side.
Yeah, it's the flip side. It's like, you ever get a text message and get the tone wrong?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I've shot myself in the foot so many times because I think they're being angry. And so I respond in like more of a snarky remark.
Full
and
stop.
Like, yeah. And
I'm putting a full stop there.
Right.
Exclamation mark.
Yeah, exactly. And the reality is, oftentimes we get the tone of Jesus wrong.
Yeah.
I think he said it like this. Unless you people see signs and wonders, you'll never believe.
Mm.
Why? Because what he does right after that.
Yeah.
He heals the boy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like.
Is he being snarky and going, oh, you'll never believe. Boom. Done.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So we love to pick these verses out to prove that, you know, you don't need a sign. You don't need a wonder. Actually, even after he says that, it says, and then many of these things were written, all the signs and wonders that he did so that you would believe.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the power because when the sign of the wonder happens in whatever form, when the supernatural, be it spectacular or not, happens, it brings external revelation of the reality of something that you don't understand, which actually overcomes your confirmation bias. Because otherwise the people walk in and go, I'll listen to the thing that confirms what I believe and what I want to believe.
Yep.
And I very rarely will entertain something which confronts that because I don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But it's when God steps in and forces you to be confronted with something that you cannot rationalize or reconcile to your core beliefs, that causes you to have to drop your biases and you actually have to explore.
So good.
And I think that's the place where James says, when you draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. Mm. It's in that moment of that gray that, oh, I don't know what to do with this now.
Yeah.
That's where God meets us in that moment.
He has something to work with at that point.
Yeah.
Otherwise he doesn't. Mm. You know, I think Thomas gets the Apostle Thomas gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
You know, in my subtitle, my Bible,
Doubting Thomas.
Yeah. I mean, here's the guy who's given up his life to follow Jesus Christ, is an apostle of the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and what was he known for? His failure.
Yeah.
And the reality is I think if we look at it in a realistic approach, like practical approach, here he for some reason when Jesus showed up in the room, he wasn't there. And all the disciples got to see Jesus. I don't know if they sent him to get food. Like, I mean, like something had to happen where he's not there. He's like, so Thomas is like rocking up with the fish and the loaves, you know, like, hey guys, let's try this. Maybe we can multiply. I don't know what he's doing.
This is all I
could
get.
He gets back and they're like, hey guys. And you know, whatever. Peter's like, bro, you missed it.
Yeah.
Like we just saw Jesus, like Jesus appeared to us. Like, and in his mind, he's like, no way.
Yeah.
Now, should he have believed
it? If you were
hanging
out with your mates and they said this spectacular thing happened, you'd instantly go, nah.
Yeah, hold on.
You're making fun of me right now.
Yeah. And I think
that was still humans, right?
Right. And I also think this. I think he wanted his own experience.
Exactly right. Yeah.
The disciples got to encounter Jesus. Why not him? They followed him. He followed him just as much as they did.
Yeah.
He wanted his own encounter too.
Mm.
And so, should he have believed the disciples? Absolutely. But I also understand his yearning for wanting an encounter himself.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Jesus confront his yearning? He shows up to him.
Yeah.
He's like, not only can you see me, why don't you touch me?
Which we don't have a record of anyone else being invited to do that.
Also, we don't have a record of this. He shouldn't be known as Thomas the Doubter. He should be known as Thomas the Proclaimer because he was the first apostle written in Scripture to say in the end, after he touches him, saying, my Lord and my God, he's the first one to recognize Jesus' divinity after his resurrection before Pentecost.
What?
Ooh.
Holy dooly. My Lord,
holy
my God.
Dooly. What is that?
Come on.
But yeah, come on. So he should not be known as Thomas the Doubter. He should be known as Thomas the Proclaimer.
Yeah.
That's the reality. That's
so
because
cool.
He knew Jesus in his humanity, but he finally saw Jesus in his divinity.
So cool.
And that's how you overcome doubt and unbelief
come on.
Through encounter.
Boom. Wow. Okay. We're going to have to...
On that bombshell.
Just leave it there. Holy
that's where we land.
Holy dooly. Hey, thanks so much, Paul.
Yeah. So good to be with you guys.
In. Yeah.
I love River Life. I love this church. I love you guys. I love... I just... You're family for me. You know, and you literally are. You know, Ruth comes from this church and we just love you.
Yeah.
So
and we do as well.
Mutual.
Yeah, we love you. Thanks so much for coming.
Love you guys.
And every time, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll probably have you back in 6 months' time.
Let's hope.
For another podcast.
Hey,
and it'd be amazing.
Love you.
So cool. And yeah, we'll be praying for you with the book sales and also, yeah, with the change in life, I guess, with pastoral ministry. Yeah.
Cool.
But I'm really excited. I feel like God's going to do some cool stuff in your life through that. Yeah, okay. It's going to be awesome.
Bring it on.
All right, cool. Links in the show notes to Paul's new book. And yeah, just check it out. Amazon will, you'll get it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Going Deeper. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you subscribe, share it around. If this has touched you, then share it with someone else. Let them experience the power of God's peace. Maybe it'll help them in their moment of unbelief. But we trust that you've been totally blessed by this, and we'll be back soon.
Thanks for listening to this River Life podcast. Make sure you subscribe to keep up to date with all the latest content. If this podcast has raised any questions for you, contact us via church@riverlifechurch.org.au or through Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening.